People love him already.
He's got the Rhode Island twang.
The long pass to Moore and a pin block from Martin.
Tune in to Cam's Corner.
He's going to make it here.
Draws the foul for another Rhode Island and one.
Podcast. He's got his own podcast.
It's good off the backboard and in.
On a break.
And we're back, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Cam's Corner, Season 4, Episode 7, Episode 107. And I'm honored to introduce today's guest, NBA veteran CJ Miles joins the show today. CJ, thank you so much for hopping on.
Yes, sir, man. Thank you for having me, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. And, you know, we're going to get into the ins and outs of your NBA career and your music career as well. But whenever I start off episodes, I love asking guests about their roots, you know, where they're from. So for yourself, from Dallas, Texas, McDonald's All-American in high school, ranked 10th best senior prospect in the country at the time, drafted in the second round, of course, out of high school to the Jazz. But so clearly you have a basketball background. Wanted to know about what it was like growing up at a young age in Dallas and what the basketball scene was like for you.
I mean, in Dallas, for me, it's full of hoopers, right? Like, you know, I feel like in a lot of inner city situations, right? Like a lot of people, like there's a lot of guys you think are really, really good early and guys that kind of like, you know, like certain things happen in life, they fade in and out, but like those guys are really responsible for a lot of the growth of my game. There were guys I thought were better than me growing up, you know, by a large amount. but I love the challenge of that. I love going everywhere and knowing that, you know, I knew I was good because all I did was hoop, but like going to places and getting challenged that way, like knowing I was going to get the best out of everybody from my early age was always one of the things I enjoyed. It was the reason why I wanted to go to the NBA. And then I was right under like the one of the big booms of like Texas basketball. So I was right after LaMarcus Aldridge, Chris Bosh, Andre Emmett. Like, I watched those guys in real time, like, change the scene in the city and go be on national TV and go to the NBA and go Darren Williams, Bracy Wright, right? Like, I saw all those guys. So, like, and I tell people this story all the time, rest his soul, but Andre Emmett, like, I remember he was one of the first moments that showed me, like, what basketball could really do from where we were from was seeing him in the college dunk contest at Texas Tech and him jumping over those kids and dunking and getting in the camera. And I was like, this is way bigger than I think it is, you know? And I think that was one of the sparks for me at a young age. And then after that, it was just about putting the work in.
Yeah. Did you have any, obviously again, McDonald's All-American, you played in the Jordan Classic game. Were there any, I guess, mentors at that time that were either at the NBA level around that atmosphere that kind of mentored you or anything, or outside of that, I guess, any mentors that kind of prepared you for what was to come?
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, basketball-wise, there was, like, you know, it was really – I just was a hooper. I loved it, right? Like, all my knowledge and all my, like – don't get me wrong. There were people that I had coaches that helped me as I got older, but, like, the base of it is just me wanting it.
Yeah.
Like, me just being outside all day, every day, and just my parents, you know, doing a good job of put me in situations to play because they knew I wanted to locally and things like that. But me really just chasing it down. And then I had a great high school coach in JD Mayo who helped me, who actually coached Larry Johnson, coached Grandmama. So, like, he had experience with, you know, players really good at a young age and, you know, how to push them and things like that. So I was grateful for that. And then, like I said, my parents, my dad, those people, like, and then, like I said, just my peers, just, like, people who love the hoop, right? Like, those are my teachers, like, just my life in general.
Yeah, and again, committed to the University of Texas. If your name wasn't going to get called, that's where you were going to end up going. What was your mindset at that time? Like, did you kind of have a feeling like, okay, I'm probably going to get drafted? Or what was, like, that headspace like as an 18-year-old kid waiting for the draft to happen?
I still can't explain it, really. Like, you know? I still, to this day, even like now that my career is over, I do a lot of reflect on it now because I feel like you can't really understand something until it's done, until it's, you can see it in totality. So like now, like a lot of stuff is being, the last couple of years is just uncovered for me, like just things. But like that moment, I'm still trying to figure out because and maybe I could just chalk it up to being a kid and being able to just be in the moment, right? And not really think about it and just like go day by day. And let everybody else run around and wear their heads off, right? Like, because I just, up until the draft, I was going to school. Like, I had no reason not to think I wasn't going to school, right? And then I got guarantees from a couple of teams that said they were going to draft me. And then some things happened right before the draft that made it look like, you know, things are going to be different, which they were. But, I mean, I knew where I wanted to be, which is to play basketball. So whatever the best situation for me to play basketball in is where I was going to go. And after the draft, I hadn't signed with an agent, so I had the opportunity to pick if I wanted to go to school or not. And, you know, Utah was real, real good about, you know, the deal they gave me to give me a chance to earn my spot, and that's why I went.
Yeah, and I love the podcast you were on with Theo Pinson, Run Your Race. You talked a lot about how you're an 18-year-old kid, the youngest player drafted in Jazz history, right? A lot of these kids are going to college, developing at that level, but you were able to develop at the pro level at the same age as these kids. So, and then you said, like, your fourth year was when you really got to start your career and you felt like your game was starting to elevate at the pro level. But just talk about that transition as a high schooler, having to translate your game to the pro level right out of high school.
It was tough in a way because, you know, at that age, I am nothing but basketball, right? That's who I am to my core. Like, that's all I want to do, all I do, like, that's it, right? And you immediately go to another level because of the jump. And the first thing you get there and the first thing they tell you is that you're not good enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and there's all these things that they're picking at. They're telling you, hear more about what you can't do than what you can do for such a long time. Like, I spent majority of my time in the early of my career just being told what I couldn't do. And you kind of lose confidence, right? Like, you lose, like, your own personal, like, wiggle to yourself in your game, your own, like, play style, like, that stuff fades because now you're just trying to become whatever they want you to become so you can play. And I used to have these moments where, like, who I was as a basketball player would fight what they wanted me to be. So it made the game so hard. Right. Like, my natural instincts would take over. And because of that, I would be, you know, the strict system we were in at the time would put me off page with everybody else. And I would look like I was being selfish. You know what I mean? It looked like I didn't know what I was doing, but I was like, I'm just playing basketball. And I fought that for so long and it led to so much overthinking and mistakes and things. Right. That was the hardest thing about it. Like, because that slows down the growth. Right. Because you don't, every mistake looks like defiance. And it's not like I'm just trying to like play, right? I'm trying to figure it out, but it looks like I'm being strict, like straight up defiant to my coaches and what they want. And that's not the case. Like, I was just where the league is now. Right. Like, the league is young and free. And I was a kid that had done nothing but play basketball. I didn't go to college and get put in the system and go through like that type of, I didn't get the training that the other guys, the already NBA had gotten. I hadn't been told to be less creative yet. So all I knew was that. And, you know, you kind of get beat up a little bit until like a lot of that comes out of you if you don't get the right opportunity that lets it grow.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask you down the line too with these questions about like the transition throughout your career and like how you kind of adjusted to the new style of play and stuff like that throughout your career. But I don't want to make you sound old, but during this time when I was watching you and I was in elementary school, so I started watching the NBA more religiously. I started to get into the game and I found out that I just loved basketball. Like I played sports as a kid, but basketball was just, it just stuck out more. And I tell people the story all the time. Dan Mazzulla, so Celtics head coach now, Joe Mazzulla, his dad, Dan, was a longtime mentor and coach for me, like my whole entire playing career at, you know, middle school, high school. And he made me really fall in love with the game of basketball. So elementary school, kind of just starting to get into it before I met Dan. You know, obviously Kobe was a guy that I loved, and I know you have a lot of Kobe stories and stuff like that, but was he a player on the floor early on in your career that kind of stuck in your head more than others? Like, do you have any stories of what Kobe would tell you on the floor and how he kind of shaped your mentality as a player early on?
The things he said on the floor were strictly competition things.
Yeah, right.
Which is still in itself teaching, right? Like, you know, I remember days where, like, you could just see, like, that really locked in. Like, if we came out to the jump ball and some of the games we played them and he didn't dap nobody up, it was like, ah, okay, I see what type of, you know what I mean? Like, he might take 45 shots tonight, right? Like, he's in one of those, right? Like, and then, not that he was that different when he dapped people up, but it just let you know really where you needed to go to even be able to not get embarrassed tonight, right? Like, he elevated you because of that. And obviously, like, one of the coolest things about my career is that I got to play against all the guys that I was trying to emulate, imitate before I got to the league. Like, I got Tracy McGrady young enough when he was in Houston with Yao. I got Kobe. I got Ray Allen. I got Paul Pierce. I got I got all those guys, right? Like, and they were my matchups. I got Melo in the playoffs a couple years in a row. I got, like, I mean, just go through it. I got Bron. I got a little bit of 8 and 24 of Kobe. I got Bron in every stage of his career. I got young D Wade. I got, like, all the guys that, like, were the guys for me, even if they hadn't been in the league that long, the guys that I was really watching, I got them right away. And, you know, they kind of get thrown in the fire with that a little bit. And all those guys taught me, you know, just – and they changed my approach, you know? Like,
yeah,
they changed the way I saw the game and the way I saw it wholly. And then they also made me figure out who I was to my team and what my team needed me to be to even have chances. You know what I mean? It made me see everything. It made me be honest with myself and who I was and things like that.
Yeah, because I know early on in your career with Utah, you had some playoff berths, again, playing up against Kobe, like, early on in his career as well. Mm-hmm. And talking, again, with Theo Pinson on that pod about, like, the early troubles that Kobe would give you and, like, kind of, like, the taste you got as a rookie in, like, a first few years in the league. Were there any other players like Kobe that gave you that kind of trouble? Like, any – again, say it again.
Rip Hamilton.
Yeah.
Rip Hamilton. I mean, Ray Allen in Seattle. Like, I'm we talking about age. I played in Seattle, right? Like,
yeah.
We said Kobe already. Paul Pierce was so good, man. We make jokes about him now because of the stuff he does in the media and stuff like that. But he's named the truth for a reason. Who? Manu Ginobili. That was a nightmare, honestly. Like,
yeah.
And then I remember there's a story I got from when I played Rip the early in my career when he was in Detroit, when they were really good around him, when they were just, you know, the best team in the East for multiple years in a row, things like that. And trying to guard him, like, just exhausted, like 4 or 5, 6 minutes to the game, like trying to find a second win already that early, right? And I remember coming to the bench and Phil Johnson, who was the assistant coach at that time, like, he walks up to me, he like kneels in front of me, he's laughing. Like it's like laughing. I'm mad, right? Like, and I'm looking at him like, what's so funny? And he chuckles. And eventually I chuckle because he's chuckling, right? And he's like, it's just funny because you look like Rip Hamilton trying to guard Jeff Hornacek.
Yeah.
Because he was like, he coached Jeff and he was like, that's what it looked like. He was like, and he was basically his way of saying, you got to go through this. Like, there's nothing I could teach you in practice or doing, this is the best way you're going to get to be able to prepare for this and learn. Like, I took a lot of stuff from those, him and Ray Allen off the ball and how to get open and things like that, right? But it was like, he just chuckles. He was like, because he knew I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
In the moment, I couldn't see what it really was. I was only thinking about not doing my job and letting my team down and not getting, you know what I mean? Like, he was like, this has got to happen for you to ever be able to be as good as you want to be.
Mm-hmm. And, like, nowadays, again, we talked about, like, how we're going to talk about how, like, the league's changing and how you were able to transform as a player. But back then, like, during that time was, one of my favorite eras of basketball. And, like, it was kind of, like, forward dominant, like LeBron, Melo, all these guys are, like, taller. And, like, you know, again, similar build to yourself. I'm a diehard Knicks fan. I love watching Carmelo Anthony play. Like, that kind of got my love for the game of basketball up, too. But, you played up against probably, like, the best of the best as far as small forwards go during that mid-2010s era. But, for me being a Knicks fan, do you have any Carmelo stories battling up against him? Again, the playoff matchups you guys would have.
I just remember it just being, like, this – it was just – that was going to be such a physical fight, like, from then the other guys, right? So, like, it would be little things I used to do to just try to, like, get on his nerves. Like we'd be coming down the floor and – I would be meeting him early, like at half court, and I would just stop. Like, just, he would have to just, like, run into me. Like, I would just stop. Like, we just have to have some type of contact. And it was just one of those things. Like, he just got to know I'm here, right? Like, he's going to take 30 shots. I never looked at it like, which is the hard thing when you get, because, like, written up about and fans being able to get to you now with social media coming in there. And you being given this identity as not being able to stop these guys when nobody stops these guys. Because they don't look at it the way I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it like he's going to score. But if he scores 25 tonight and he had to take 30 shots to get it, then I did my job, right? Like, he can't – my job is, like, not to let him get in the rhythm and have 35 on 13 shots and 12 free throws, and that's the way I'm looking at it. Because he's going to get thrown the ball the whole game. He's going to get too many opportunities, and he's too good with the rules that I have defending him to ever even think of that I'm the reason that he doesn't score tonight.
Yeah.
Like, I just – my job is only to make it hard, to make it work. I don't even say hard, to make him work, right? Like – because he could be cooking the whole game, but if I made him work the whole game and we get to that last 6 minutes in the fourth, I got a chance to get, you know, a deflection or something that's led to fatigue that can mess his rhythm up late in the game.
Yeah, and on the same lines as, like, the Knicks, like, backtracking a little bit, we talked before we started. Former Knick and Maverick, Ricky Lito, hopped on the pod. The clip that kind of, like, attracted us and got, like, the connection going with me and you was that clip of his welcome to the league moment. Was against you, chasing you off of down screens. I think it was in the preseason. He talked about how you and Monte Ellis were, like, the two toughest people he's ever had to guard in the league. Similar to that. Yeah, Monte was a dog, dude.
Another high school guy. We were saying high school class.
Oh, yeah? Oh, wow. He was, again, a fun player to watch. But similar to that, I mean, I know you talked again on the Run Your Race pod about your welcome to the league moment was kind of similar to that. Guarding Luke Jackson at the time, and I didn't really know who Luke Jackson was, but it was similar to that moment in a way.
Literally the same moment.
Yeah, run me through that a little bit. That moment and like kind of like backtracking like your rookie year.
In total honesty, like just being, I'm young, right? I'm not playing a lot, right? Not playing, and to be completely honest, from the beginning of like I'm not even like completely locked in that I'm gonna play to play. Like I'm just like kind of like. I'm watching and picking stuff up in the game, but I'm not thinking about playing at this time because I'm not playing. I just happened to be dressed that night because somebody might have been hurt or something, right? Like, and I'm sitting on the end of the bench, and the game is close. Like, so I know I'm not playing because it's like late. It's like late third quarter or maybe third quarter, whatever. The game is closer most of the night, if I remember correctly. But I remember them going on a crazy run because it's in Portland, and then going up crazy, going up big, and all of a sudden. It's like, oh, shit. I get put in the game, right? And I think he had already played some and been in the game that night too. So, like, he already got the one up on that, right? And he makes one. And then next thing you know, they just running him off. And he's just getting screened for by everybody on the floor. And I'm chasing, right? Like, and I'm just doing what I can. I'm chasing. And he's just knocking things down. And then he goes in this little flurry. He might have scored like 8, 11, 12 points or something like that, right? And that's the first time in my life that it happened to me. Like that, right? Especially when an arena at that time, and still now, that arena gets crazy. It's rocking too, like, and they're going nuts for him. And like, and you just feel helpless to the point. Like, that's the first time I ever felt like that. And I just remember, like, feeling the most defeated I had ever felt. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just trying to figure out, like, what in the world just happened? And, just being like, I'm never going to play again. like, you know what I mean? Like, why would they put me in the game again after that, right? Like, but that's a crazy – but he was – I mean, that's not a knock either. Like, he was an NBA basketball. He was a good player. He had a skill set. He could shoot. He had a good college career too. Like, but it was just crazy. Like, I never thought it was going to be him.
Yeah, those are the best types of stories, though. Like, you never know who it's going to be. Like, usually some guys are like, oh, it was LeBron. It was whatever, like, big-name guys, but –
it's also one of those moments of realizing too, like, obviously I knew this,
like,
I
was everybody's good
that everybody it's mostly opportunity a lot of times anyway. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, and it has nothing to do with skill set sometimes.
Right. And outside of Ricky, do you remember any moments where you could do the same to a rookie, like give them their welcome to the NBA moment where you're just like torching the young guys?
I didn't even remember that was Rick. Like, I didn't even until he said it, like, then I remember the game, but like, I do remember just knowing like, there's matchups with young, knowing that they just don't know enough, right? Like knowing that I'm going to get an opportunity to get some shots based off the fact that they just haven't played enough. Right. Like, they just won't recognize sets or they'll be late to go help. And then by the time they get back to me, I'm gone. Like, stuff that's just going to happen from their youth. Like, there's nothing they can do about it, right? And that's why you hear guys like that have so many, like, welcome to the NBA stories, because you just don't know enough. Like, they're a step ahead of you, and you haven't done enough scout. You haven't seen enough scout reports. You haven't seen enough, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And you don't know every time out play that this play is for me. We're not going to call it. We're not going to, right? Like, you're not even alert to even be thinking that way. And next thing you know, I'm off a down screen and one turns into three and three turns into seven. And now, like, you on the bench. It's the way it go.
Did you have any guys kind of catch you off guard now that we're on the topic of rookies, like when you were playing, like guys coming into the league and you're like, okay, he can hoop and he's like ahead of his time?
So yes and no. Like, I got to a point where I respected the game enough to do my due diligence, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I wouldn't be caught off guard like that.
But there were
definitely young guys that you could see and be like, yo, once he starts to get in the rotation, he's going to be good.
Yeah.
So like, and you know, they got a skill set. And we would talk about that, especially because I spent so much time going from starter to a six-man bench player. So I had to, like, kind of know everybody that was playing because my matchups would be different so much. So I kind of, like, got away from that. But, yeah, there's a bunch of talented guys that I won't say catch you off guard, but you know that if they get enough opportunity tonight that they're capable.
Mm. Yeah,
go ahead.
And going back, yeah, on the timeline of, like, your career, you spent a lot of time in Utah after being drafted, almost had the opportunity to play with OKC. That was a big storyline in 2008. This is when KD was on the come up, Russell Westbrook. I mean, this was when, like, the prime Thunder were, like, being assembled, or, like, right before Harden. But, again, you're a restricted free agent. Utah was able to match the deal. You signed, like, a four-year, like, $15 million deal. Do you think that Oklahoma could have won a ring if you were a part of that team at that point?
I don't know if I can't answer that. Like, it's hard to say that. Potentially, yes, because you look at what they did. They end up going to the finals with that team, right? Like, not saying I'm the tipping point or anything, but I do know that is the one thing that I, like, enjoy. Like, we talk about, like, if that would have happened. Because mostly just for the fact that I was going to be with guys my age and my – like, you know what I mean? Like, to be able to grow with
– on the come up too, yeah.
Yeah, and be with those guys. And, like, you know, that was what I was the most excited for with that offer. Like, I'm not saying I hated going back to Utah, but I had to look at both sides. Like, and I was excited about that. Like, I'm a year older than KD. Like, I'm not – like, you know what I mean? Like, and then same with the rest. We're all around the same age within 3 years of each other. And that was the most exciting part. And knowing you're going into a place that's going to allow growth. Meaning they're prepared to deal with mistakes and things like that. And I was in a position where, like, that wasn't the case, being with Jerry Sloan and being with, like, how he felt about young players. And, you know, I love Jerry Sloan and we grew to, you know, we were just from two different worlds, right? Like, we were both aliens to each other. it was hard to, like, to go into to we had to learn how to, you know, communicate with each other, how to learn. He had to learn how to, like, talk to me and understand me and things that, like, you know, why I did things I did or what I was trying to figure out. And same with him, right? But going into that was just like I just imagine, because, like, you look at the rest of my career, like, there are like 2 and 3 year stints of, like, you know, serving, doing my job, like a niche that I grew into. But, like, one of the things that's beautiful about the NBA is when you see guys, we had a conversation, me and somebody, about Kyle Lowry, like him getting in Toronto and getting that long tenure of being able to gradually grow with the organization and himself into what he grew into there, being an all-star guard and that team turned into what they turned into and being a part of that culture. Being able to really be in that from a ground up is a different thing, because players become things that they might not even know they could become at that time. Because they get the time.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, going down, again, the line of your career, like, looking at a lot of stats and, like, recent trends that, like, I mean, again, you're a player at the time where you stuck out to people. But a stat that I saw, like, watching highlights of your game and, like, how your game translated, like, year after year, 10 made threes, franchise record for the Cavs in 2014 against the Sixers, right? Run me through that game. For when you were playing with the Cavs, 10 threes, like, how unconscious you were at that point. Was that something that you would always bring, like that you knew that you could probably do every game?
So that was the first year that shooter became, like, a reality in, like, who I was as a player. Right. Like, I could score. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people knew I could score, and I could score in bunches. Have been known for being, you know, streaky because I've been playing six man and, you know, being in positions where that's how I was used too. Like, you know, and when I got there, now I'm playing with another, you know, all-star guard, playing with Kyrie. And Mike Brown comes to me and he says, you know, you shoot the ball too well for that not to be something that you expand in your game, like the repertoire of like shooting off the move, better footwork, better, like making that a real threat. And we're talking about looking at the people that I'm playing with. I'm playing with, you know, guard, ball dominant guards, penetrators, breaking people down, defenses shifting to them. Like that year is him and Deion Waiters, Kyrie and Deion Waiters, right? Like, and obviously I want to play number one, first more than anything. So if I can find a way where I make the game easier for the best player on our team, I'm guaranteeing myself minutes, right? So going into that year, that was my main focus. So it's not a coincidence that I have a game like that. Like, and then going into that game, we knew Philly was bad at guarding the three. Like, I knew that. So, like, I was already in a hair trigger type mode going into the game because I knew I was going to have space and time. I came out. We got some easy buckets early. I remember, like, Mike Brown ran some down screens for me early in the game, and like I was just so I could get a feel of how they were playing it. They overplayed one, under one. I got a layup, and then I got a dump off to Anderson Barajal so I could feel like how the spacing was with the defense and how they were guarding it. And once I got like a feel of where their gaps were, I just started picking it apart. One in transition, run through, get to the corner, know the guy's going to be late coming out of help. Like it's a younger guy, also, too. That's a young team. They're closing out. Like a drill, right? Just check the box, not to run me off the line. So yeah. That's too much space. So like I'm catching and shooting, knowing you're not. I'm not even thinking about the defense at this point. So like every shot's essentially an open shot to me. That's my mindset. But I already know that you're not contesting in a way to stop me from shooting it. So I don't think about you. So I just found a rhythm, and guys started looking for me. I wish I could have stayed in longer because we ended up blowing them out, so I didn't play almost the whole fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I wanted to see how many I could have got, but, like, Mike Brown, like, right, he wasn't thinking about a record, like.
Right. I think that's still a franchise record to this day, but.
Kyrie broke it.
Oh, he did break it?
I broke it, like, the next year or 2 years later.
Wow.
I remember watching it, actually, and I remember hitting him, like.
And that was, like, one of his first years in the league, too.
When he broke it, it was after. When he broke it. It was I was in Indiana when he broke it. So I had left.
Okay.
So now, like, he's early in his career, so probably like 4 or 5 years. But
And then like we said, like that was kind of like giving you more of a confidence and opening up a part to your game that you knew that you had.
And then just the way opportunities opened up for me to playing wise, like people. One, they watched me work on that. They watched me develop that, and they watched the time that I put in. So, like, guys trusted me in situations for the rest of my career with that, right, with catch-and-shoot things. I ended up being a lot of that time after that, being one of the top catch-and-shoot guys in the league, leading the league in corner three percentage at one point, points per touch I was leading the league at one point. Like, a lot of things like that came from just, like, developing that and making it a weapon, right? If this is how I can help my team and keep my job, then let's go at it, right?
Yeah. And that 2014 offseason, of course, is when LeBron signed back with the Cavs. But I saw again on the podcast with Theo, Kyrie called you and he's like, damn, really? Like you chose to go with free agency and go to Indiana. But you talked a lot about, too, Larry Bird. Yeah.
I have this, right? Like, because at the end of the day, this is still a business first and you can't play around with the business. So, like, because I got the deal on the first day of free agency. Like, it wasn't like I was sitting around and, like, first day of free agency came. And I was on my way to fly to Indiana while being on the phone with Memphis and Memphis trying to buy time because they were trying to make space too so we could come talk to them. And I went to meet with Indiana and I sat at the table with Larry Bird, who is running the number one team at the East at the time. And they offered me a deal, which, you know, checked all the boxes. I got paid 4 years with a player option on the fourth. Like, you know what I mean? The whole, it couldn't make any more sense. Going into a winning situation, them knowing exactly how they're going to use me to be the sixth man, to be a shooter, to be a floor spread, you know what I mean? Like, getting to play my role on a higher level. Obviously, Paul breaks his leg that summer, so it changes the next year. But
right
at that time, I couldn't have got a better offer besides besides going back to Cleveland knowing that LeBron's coming. We didn't know if he was coming yet. They didn't know. That's why I couldn't wait. They were trying to figure out what he was going to do.
Yeah, it's like you look back at like again, the OKC thing, like how that didn't pan out with LeBron. Like you could have played with alongside with LeBron, but everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, it does. But you look at it like that too, because like him coming back to Cleveland, I'm a perfect player to be on that team.
For sure.
I check all the boxes for the guys they wanted beside Kyrie and LeBron at the time. The athletic shooter, 3-and-D type, like, you know what I mean? Like multiple positions. Like I was made for that. They had basically bred me for 2 years for the team without knowing. We didn't know that happened, but.
But like I said, everything kind of happens for a reason. You kind of talk about how Indiana was like the prime years of your career. Yeah. You kind of were able to separate yourself from like when Paul was hurt. I mean, obviously you don't want to see that happen, but you were able to really put yourself on the map as far as being like the guy.
Yeah.
And then Paul comes back. For sure. Paul comes back after that. You spend like two full seasons, like full strength. What was it like being able to play with him at full strength?
I mean, he's just one of those guys, like, right, like that can just do everything on the basketball floor. Mm. And supreme competitor, right? Like really wants to win, works. It was just, you know, it's always great to be able to see a guy that special and be able to aid him, right? Like be able to help it and to be able to understand that this team has a chance also, like with a guy like that, you know, because the identity we already had, the coach we already had coming off the year before, like, you know, making that run without him and him trying to get back and just getting to the playoffs to go in the next year and being in the playoffs the next 2 years. Like, I mean, we lost to really good teams, right? It's not like we lost to LeBron 1 year and we lost to Toronto 1 year. Like, those were the top dogs at the time who end up being champions within the next few years too. Those, both of those teams, LeBron wins one and they win one, right? Like, so, you know, we're not far away. It's just timing.
Right. And the thing I talked about before, like at the beginning of the podcast, on how longer tenured career, started your career in 2005, officially ended in 2022, on how the game has changed over the years for you as a pro, right? Again, playing with guys like playing against guys, having to guard guys like Dirk, playing against like Yao, and again, like you said, Tracy McGrady, all these great players, LeBron, Kobe, Melo. I mean, the list goes on. But talk about like the transition period over the years as a player, and like watching the game change like before your eyes. Like, how were you able to change? Like, did you feel like you had to change as a player, or was it more so just having the background and being in all these different systems was how you kind of just went with the flow? Like, talk about that transition period.
It was more so just the willingness to put the game first, honestly, like, and paying attention to the game, right? Like, and understanding, like I said, being honest with myself and knowing how I see myself, but also knowing, like we talked about, it's a business too. So like understanding how the people that got to hire me see me, how do they see me? How do they want to use me? So if I know that, like I did an interview with somebody a couple of days ago, and we talked about it. I was like, yeah, I got tagged as a shooter, right? And that's how they saw me, and that's what they wanted me to be. And I checked the box, and I trained that to be able to check that box to keep my job. But if you look up my highlights, there's plenty of highlights of me dunking on people.
Oh, yeah.
Because the boxes, I got to be on the floor, and it brought opportunities to showcase other parts of my game, right? Now, granted, like, obviously, that's heavy, and that's what they want me to do. It's the role I'm playing. I got to play it. But what I'm saying is by me checking my ego and understanding everything and having an awareness, it allowed me to stay on the floor, which is – the number one thing you want. Like, you can have all the skills in the world and don't want to check your ego at the door for where you are right now, and then you can't get on the floor to show them. So it doesn't matter, right? So all the work I'm putting in would not matter if I did not put the game first and understand what my team wanted from me and where I was at. I'm playing with Darren Woods and Carlos Boozer. Then I'm playing with Kyrie. Then I'm playing with Paul George. And I play with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. Chances are, like, I'm not turning into one of those guys in that situation when you're stepping into these places like that, that's already built, and those guys obviously not falling off anytime soon. So why did they bring you there? They didn't bring you there to be that. They brought you there for a reason. Figure out what that is, know what that is, and be that. Be the DeMar DeRozan of your space. And that's what I carried. And every time they asked me to do something different, I just carried that mentality into it. When they asked me to go play the four, it's like, all right, it's going to be crazy, but like, here, like, what I need to do, I need to do some extra conditioning because everybody's bigger. I need to the release gets even quicker because now I know I'm going to have some more catch and shoot stuff. I got to figure out how to play the game from the pick and roll perspective. Footwork's got to learn how to slip out of screens and things like that because I've been coming off of them for 10 years. Now I got to set them, right? Like, it's just understanding what you got to do.
Yeah, and do you feel like entering Toronto, again, with Kyle Lowry, DeMar, Siakam was there at the time, OG was a rookie, that team was pretty solid. Do you feel, as far as entering that situation, it was kind of similar to Indiana? Again, a team that's on the cusp of a playoff berth and a deep playoff berth. What was that mindset for you heading into Toronto in 2017?
So it was that, and then knowing that they had that big pool of young talent, right? Like, yeah. And knowing that I was – once I got there, seeing that I was going to be spending a lot of time with them because I got kind of the role was going to be six man off the bench, you know, so I was going to play a lot of minutes with them and just like instilling confidence in them. Like, I tell people all the time, I get so much credit for being like bench dad for that unit, but those guys were good already. Like, all I did was tell them to shoot the ball. Like, all I did was like instill confidence in them and like tell them to go, right? Like, and I just provided like a little bit of like steadiness to it because like I had seen so much, like I didn't really waver. And then when it was, and then by the time we got in spots in the season where I was struggling a little bit, they were able to be there for me because we had been pouring into each other the whole year. Right. And I think that was really my most fulfilling part about that part of being there. Cause at that point in my career, really being able to really be a veteran to some guys that I felt like I wish I had.
Right. Like, I was just going to ask you that as far as like adding on to that, you played with, again, a lot of vets, played against a lot of vets. Who were some rookies outside of Kyle? Oh, not, I guess Kyle and DeMar weren't rookies, but again, younger guys that you were able to coach and mentor, like as a player in the later years of your career.
I mean, really just like being around those, the young squad in Toronto, first of all, like obviously like OG, Pascal, Fred, DeLon, Jakob, those guys. And like I said, like I just showed up, right? Like, and just was me, right? I was at, when they got to the gym, I was at the gym. When we were in the games together, like I never approached him in a way of like, I'm the vet, make sure you pass me the ball with the seams right off my down screens. Like I didn't come in with the Stacey Patton type attitude, right? I approached them game forward, like the game's first, right? Like I told them we were the best bench in the league before we played a game, right? Like it was that type of thing. Like, and I wanted to show them that the big part of this is confidence. You're already here. It's not talent. It's confidence and opportunity. Like, it's not about, like, you wouldn't be here if you couldn't play basketball.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. Like, that's the easiest cut and dry thing I can tell you. Like, I know you got some type of talent because I'm looking at you.
Right.
So I'm not going to get at that. We're going to figure out how to magnify it. We're going to figure out what things need to be done to make you better and to make us better as a unit. But like that. And then I had, you know, Miles Turner, George Niang in Indiana. Mm-hmm. I feel like guys that like I had a good relationship with and just kind of like, I just, you know, I kept it a bean with them. Like that was the biggest thing too with guys. Like I know it's not always fair. I know there's a business side to it. I know, but look, you should be playing more.
Yeah.
We can't change that. What can we do? We can go shoot these extra shots after practice.
Right.
We can go, right. We can be ready every time they call your name. Right. That's what we can do. But I'm also be honest with you. You should have got more minutes. Maybe you shouldn't have took that shot. Maybe you should have. Maybe we're going to keep it a bean all the time. But we also going to be honest about everything else too, right? Like, you know, like you got tired. That's why you short your last three shots. We need to go work out a little bit more. We need to do some, you know what I mean? Like whatever it is, like this summer, you got to lose 10 pounds or you got to gain 10 pounds, whatever it is, right? Like, let's keep it a bean, right? Like, and I think that's, you know, one of the things I tried to carry too with that. Like, you're not going to act like there's not a business side to it, but we're not going to also act like we're not going to let that stop the game side. We're not going to let that stop you from working because you feel like, well, I'm not going to play anyway because they just paid him. We're not going to do that. Right. Like, or coach is only going to play me 5 minutes because so I'm just going to be in good enough shape for those 5 minutes. We're not going to do that.
Yeah.
We're going to make them 5 minutes, 10 minutes by being in such good shape that you can make plays the whole 5 minutes. Like, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, and the new style of media, too, is kind of coming out at that point. I saw you hosted your own podcast during that time in Toronto. Did you like that? Did you like hosting your own show and kind of, like, getting into the grit of Toronto basketball?
I did that. So, like, what's crazy is, like, we talk about that new media. I was always, like I said before, when I came in, I was kind of ahead. And I was ahead with that side, too. Like, I had a show in Indiana. Nobody knows about it because it wasn't the front running.
It wasn't
of the
thing.
Fans know about it, right? Like, even going back before content was content, like, I got videos of going sneaker shopping with my music playing in the background. Like, nobody, it wasn't heard of. Like, it wasn't a thing. Like, it wasn't the thing yet, right? Like, I did it with Dime Magazine. Like, we did it. They used my song as a soundtrack. We went around, went to Flight Club in New York, did all these things before content was the number one, you know, media thing. It wasn't as personal yet. It wasn't day-to-day like that yet. Media, it was still big media, like top 10 on SportsCenter and this, that, and the third, right? But I always enjoyed that because I always enjoyed communication. I always wanted to give that other side of the line to the people that we talk to every day, like to fans, and like show that we human and show that we got voices and not let stories be written about us and for us. Mm.
For sure. But like, before we wrap up your career and wrap up the pod, I always love asking players about like their memorable moments in the NBA. But on the topic of like the new media podcast and all that, I'm sure you've seen this clip of Jeff Teague. I know he wasn't throwing you under the bus with Paul George and that whole thing. But for people that didn't see that clip, it was Jeff Teague. It was like a playoff. It was like a playoff atmosphere with Indiana. Run it through for the people listening. What that moment was like, because I don't know if you've spoken about that since Jeff has said it, but
I haven't. It's funny.
It's a funny memory to look back at.
It's
yeah,
a funny story, and I'm no shade. I'm not like it ain't like it's a funny like it's funny, and he does a great job telling stories. He's hilarious.
Yeah, he is
like,
funny. Yeah,
and like I thought it was hilarious, and that's where I'm gonna leave it. We ain't gotta.
We'll keep that up for the viewers. Yeah.
Yeah, like either way, it don't like I'm not blowing up nobody's spot, and I'm not gonna sit there, like, not doing. But like, it's a funny story. The commercial thing is true. Like the whole story is, like I said, it's told well. That's where we'll leave it.
Awesome. And like piggybacking off of that, again, memorable moments when you look back at your career. Again, you said very versatile player. You dunked on a lot of guys. 10 threes in a game. That was your most in for your personal record, but. When you look back at being able to play at this high of a level, it could be on and off the court, but I know it's probably going to be tough to pick from a 10-plus year career. Your most memorable moment as an NBA player?
It's a hard question. Like, so I guess the moment is just like, there's multiple moments, but they kind of make, like getting those chances to showcase that you belong there, right? Mm-hmm. And there's not just one, but like just that feeling, like of playing against the Lakers and playing against Kobe Bryant and Kobe having 30 and I got 26 and we were matched up, right? Like those type of nights. And I'm not saying I think I'm better than Kobe. I'm just saying like getting those nights to stand in front of the guy, right? And that guy see you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and he know, and like you're in respect, like being a, getting dapped up after the game. Like my favorite story with Kobe has been him dapping me up after the game one of the nights in Utah. We walking back and like him like commenting on moves I made in the game, saying it to me to face to face, like respect from him. Like that's probably so between that moment and the moment of sitting down with Larry Bird and Larry Bird being like, yo, I want you on my team. Like nothing nobody else can say outside of this can like, you know, take away what I know, which is who I am, what I did. Like people could say, you know, well, I didn't like his game here, or he could have did this or he could have that. I did what I was supposed to do with what I was given.
Yeah.
The best I could. And that's how I live it. I'm a second round pick that averaged 10 points a game and 20 points a night for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Leave me.
You're right,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're not taking that away from me. And that's how I see it.
And what's one thing you would tell your rookie self today, now that your NBA career is over?
keep going. Like that you're right, right? Like that your gut is right, right? Like I would, there's some things that I don't want to call it surrender. Like it's kind of more like survival because you're trying to keep your career too. But there's some things that that walls that definitely could have been broken down that you did not have to, that you don't have to like kind of bow down to. It's going to be a different route. It's going to be a little harder, but like stay in it. Just stay in the gym like you love to do and you'll be fine.
Yeah. And lastly, just like touching up on your music career, your favorite part of being an artist and like the earliest memory of you wanting to do music.
The last question first, the earliest was like, I was recording myself rapping on, this might be before your time, the Home Alone, first Home Alone movie, Talk Boy thing he has that he records in. Yeah. Like, so I was little when the movie came out, that was the actual toy then. I was recording myself rapping on that since then, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it was never the forefront. Obviously, basketball took over and I got away from it, but like, it's always been a part of me. I played piano as a kid, sang in choir in church as a kid. Like, music's always been there. And then my favorite part as the artist is that it's just my way of understanding. Like, I talk to myself the best that way. Mm. Like, it's how I break things down. It's how I keep the timeline in order. Like, it's how I remind myself that I've been through things and I've dealt with it and that it's not going to be the last time, right? Like, and then to share it and have somebody message me and say, man, this song really, you know, or some meet somebody and they quote a lyric to me, or like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That is just like, you're not alone. We all feel like that a lot. And when that happens, you know, you're not alone for those words to register with somebody. It's like proof for them and proof for me.
Yeah. All right, man, it was great. I mean, I don't want to hold you too much longer, but being able to break down your career with somebody that I watched as a kid growing up, I mean, it's pretty surreal. I don't want to make you feel old or anything, but
no,
like,
no.
It's an honor. It's an honor.
Yeah, it's cool, man. Like, this is the other side that's funny now. It's like being on this side, like,
yeah,
people running up to me. I used to play with you on 2K, or I watched you in the playoffs. I did, like, all these things, like, that's crazy because I look at it like, at the end of the day, still, I'm only 37, right? Like, I'm not like,
no, right.
But it's crazy to like, that it's done, right? Like, that that part's done, like, because you think you're going to do that forever, you know? Mm.
Dude, no, your 2K car was gross. When I used to play, like, 2K back in the day, I mean, that was, like, the Pacers were one of the teams I used to play with. I always rocked with the Knicks, but it's crazy to look back at now.
It's so crazy that 2K is done with this. Like, Halliburton coming out and saying that he chose zero because he used to play with me on 2K.
Yeah.
Like, that type of stuff is, like, it's humbling because you also look at, you know, like, I'm not – a household guy, right? Like, I wasn't, you know, the superstar guy, but like, to know that like people, you know, respected and saw the work that you did and things you did is always, you know, it's always great to hear. Everybody wants to hear that they were seen.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like I said, it's been an honor being able to talk to you. Season 4, episode 7, I believe, episode 107 overall. So we're still climbing the ranks, trying to get to 200 now. So, CJ, I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for hopping on Camp's Corner. I'll plug all CJ's socials down in the description. Cam's One Corner on all social media podcasts. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.